Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
And that was the voice of Brian Brown, our founder. And this is the voice of Michael Shook, your host of The Briefly today. With me in the studio this morning is our usual assemblage of carousing commentators, insurgent folk, and interesting folk. Missing is Susan McCabe, who is in South Carolina. I blew it. I gave away her location. She's supposed to be incognito.
Is she doing poll watching?
Part of the dark web and everything and all that deep state.
Poll watching.
Directly across from me is our flying cowboy, retired airline pilot, current small plane pilot, soundboard slinger, Montana Tex, Truman O'Brien.
All right. Getting worse. Yay. Getting worse every year. Yeehaw.
I'm going to find out other places you lived somehow, Truman, and incorporate those if there's a
way. It may take most of the intro.
Wow. Goodness. To Truman's left is still Bruce Hallman's empty chair. Well, actually, the chair is gone now, too. We don't know where it is. We lost track of it. It may have made it to Venezuela. I'm not sure.
Tim Iman has it.
Yeah, but he only paid $30 for it.
Just walked out mysteriously one day.
And man's running for governor, stealing office chairs, really.
Oh, man. Oh my goodness. Well,
sorry.
So no,
kaboom,
that's great.
That's right. And now convicted of crimes, right? I think he's going to go in with a record.
Oh, my.
Into the election, I mean, not into the office.
Tim he may Iman go more running? Places no. than that. I don't know.
Tim Iman is?
He's running for governor?
No.
Yes, he is. Yes.
You're kidding.
Absolutely.
And he's declared as a Republican.
He is.
Did I miss that somehow?
That's not surprising.
Well, it came and went. I don't think anybody was very pleased to see it make the news cycle.
No, let's see if Matt Shea will run as
lieutenant governor. Awesome.
His treasury secretary.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm Lynn Kerrigan.
I don't know if any further introduction is needed there.
That's right. Oh my
it's our rabble rousing retired many things semi-pro baseball player.
I'm retired from that, that's for sure.
Well,
and from social work.
It's good to bring a few of those
everything
things
else still on the
still
table.
On the And across from Lynn is Kevin Jones, our indefatigable indivisible Vachon person.
Good morning. It is. It's a good morning and a good evening. There'll be actually, I may be jumping the gun here. But,
no.
There will be tonight. There's a debate. And so for those who are still, March 10th is coming up, right? People have their ballots now. So there's a debate watch party. Dan Schuler is one of the host or one of the hosts at 6 o'clock at the Vachon Library.
Great.
So stop in and, check out who's still in the race. With some friends from Vachon.
That's fabulous. This is another reason to support libraries. I love libraries. They're always stepping up to do things for our democratic republic.
And the thing I think about libraries that is so wonderful is it was actually started by Andrew Carnegie, who was the titan of
steel industry.
Thank you. I couldn't get it out of my mouth.
Yeah.
Who believed, as some of the titans have done in some degree or other, like Henry Ford, who thought that we needed, livable wages to be able to buy consumer stuff. Andrew Carnegie believed that we needed to be educated if we were going to be in a democracy, and that the only way to guarantee access to education to everyone was to have a system of public libraries where books were free and available to anybody who wanted them.
Yeah, that makes me think of the movie that I think it may have already gone from the theater, an adaptation which I didn't feel like going to see of Jack London's Call of the Wild.
Hasn't been yet.
It hasn't been there? Okay, so folks who are interested in that can go check that out. And London grew up, practically raised himself, very brief, intermittent formal education, but educated himself by going to his library branches in the Southern California area.
Oakland,
was it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, great, yeah. Yeah, and reading everything he could get his hands on.
Many people did, Abraham Lincoln. I mean, many people have educated themselves.
So yeah, and I can just say if we didn't have libraries, we wouldn't have librarians, and that would be a loss for
for you.
It would be terrible.
Yes. Certainly for me.
Yeah. And where would the Music Man would have missed one of its best numbers with Madam Librarian.
Madam Librarian.
I love that. That's such a great song. Okay, I diverge and digress.
That's what we're here for.
It is Tuesday, February 25th, Shrove Tuesday, for those who want to be shriven, or Fat Tuesday, for those more religiously and or party-minded, in the year of the twittering, tweeting twit. And the briefly, I just got this, just came through. Through our dark web network of informants has an exclusive story this morning. President Trump has rocked the Capitol with a series of bold moves designed to tighten the Republican grip on the Senate while simultaneously slewing fresh chum to his base. With a stroke of a pen, by executive order, Trump has created two Senate seats for Puerto Rico and appointed the senators himself. The president's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, will occupy the junior Senate seat, and a thoroughbred horse named I Can't Stop Loving You will hold the senior seat.
I was taking you seriously this whole time until you got to the horse.
I'm glad to see at least
one. This is from our deep, dark web sources.
Yeah, I'm glad to see at least one of them is qualified and has four legs.
The Senate Majority Leader Mitch Turtle McConnell said that he spoke for all Republicans in praising the president's actions and added, I look forward to working with both of our new senators. Obviously, this will add an important new dimension of horse manure to our deliberations. Commented Trump further, it is long past time that one of the greatest of all Roman emperors, Caligula, was recognized by our nation. And by naming this beautiful horse to our Senate, we honor the legacy of Caligula and garner even more votes against the corrupt, vicious Democrats and their horribly unfair attempts to stop me from doing whatever I want. Our sources said as well that the president plans to posthumously award the Presidential Medal of Freedom to Emperor Caligula. I Can't Stop Loving You was unavailable for comment. According to his trainer, the busy gelding was in the midst of the fourth race at Palm Beach Downs, running second in the home stretch to Beat Me If You Can. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer had this to say in response to the morning's events.
Has the planet gone mad?
Yes!
And there's your you won't hear that anywhere else, folks.
At least the horse was from Central Casting, too.
That's right.
Yeah, keeping up the trend. Huh. I mean, so it's a thoroughbred racehorse, right?
Yes.
Yeah, we could run War of the Worlds right now, and people would believe it.
That is true.
I sometimes think we're in the middle of that.
Maybe we are. Well, Michael, I just want to inject what you were saying about Puerto Rico as you started. Really, I thought you were serious for a long time, and I'm sitting here thinking, that cannot be true, because we have systematically ruled out of statehood countries that are predominantly of color.
And
the Philippines, Guam, Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
I mean, the only reason they have not become states is that various politicians have not wanted that voting bloc admitted to our union.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a sad thing. It really is. That's
gerrymandering on a big scale.
On a huge scale, of course, yeah. And so they're Puerto Rico. What a terrible place to be. They're stuck. Like, they're
hurricane,
not in the door and they're not out
FEMA.
The door. They can't govern themselves, really. It's not a good situation.
Yeah, I'm not very clear about how they do their systems of government and align it. That's what I was thinking the whole time you were reading that, appointing senators from Puerto Rico was an amusing proposition to me.
So I wouldn't put it past him.
Was your deep state source Clarence Thomas's wife? Is that where you're I hear she's been doing some pretty good research lately.
Ooh, I like it.
I could I can't divulge that kind of material here on the,
maybe,
you know, it's just, I have to protect our sources.
Yeah, that could be.
I have to protect our sources. I have a correction. Last week I stated that Mickey Wright, champion women's golfer, was third all time in wins for women and men. She is fourth all time in wins for both men and women.
Still an accomplishment.
An amazing, yeah. And another note, I don't mean to be dreary or anything like that, but again, I feel like it's worth it to pay homage to people who contributed great things to our society. So Mickey Wright last week, Katherine Johnson passed away at the age of 101, and many people probably saw that movie. What a remarkable life.
Yeah.
She was just amazing. I love the
computer.
Yeah, that, and they, as they put it here, armed with a little more than a pencil,
yeah,
a slide rule, and a fine mathematical mind, she calculated the precise trajectories that let Apollo 11 land on the moon and then get back to Earth, which is, of course,
the tricky part. Yeah,
crucial.
She, John Glenn, I read when he did his first orbital flight, it would not go until he was sure that she had double-checked the numbers from the computer.
Wow.
Yeah.
In the movie Hidden Figures, I believe.
Hidden Figures.
Referring
yes.
To, and very much worth seeing a second or even third time.
You bet.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. And all the more so because as a person of African-American descent, she had to eat in different cafeterias, and it's... Those things are a sad part of it, but at the same time, inspiring that someone, just, courage and resilience is all around us.
I heard a memorial NPR story about her, and they must have interviewed her, you know, after the movie Hidden Figures, and, you know, certainly before she died. But she was telling a story of, you know, she'd been asked about working through sexism and through racism, and she gave an example of, you know, she really liked education and steeping herself in real state-of-the-art conferences and, you know, higher sciences and mathematics and all that. She was brilliant. And she was told that she could not go to a conference because they were sharing rooms and they couldn't send her off with a man. And they said, yeah, so therefore women cannot travel. And she said, is there a law?
Yeah.
And forced them to figure out a way to send her on conferences for which she was eminently qualified and
sure
would benefit them greatly.
Yeah.
But wow, she just sounded very matter of fact about it and very willing to push all the way,
mm-hmm,
if that's
mm-hmm
what it took.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another insane, similar genre, the Ruth Bader Ginsburg movie on the basis of sex was recently replayed on the local cable channels. And it's the same kind of a struggle, right? Of one woman amongst a sea of men in a classroom where the professor is not noticing that her hand is raised.
Yeah.
And going around. Yeah, so it's, you know, there's a lot of work to establish where we are and a lot more to go.
And speaking about Supreme Court justices, did you see that Sandra Sotomayor spoke out against the Supreme Court doing the bidding of President Trump?
Big time.
So really?
That was sort of front page news about 2 days ago, and then that disappeared off
wow,
the news
yeah,
cycle.
I missed that.
Well, because Trump was going to India. Come on.
Yeah.
That's right. That's the big news.
Well, and it's intriguing to me, this notion of the justices who have made statements like that, and then whether they would be obliged to recuse themselves for certain cases that may come before the court. So those are, you know, I mean, what you say is that it's surrounded by a lot of considerations. So, yeah, it's not
right,
a small thing.
Right. It's a huge thing.
Wow.
So must have been very motivated, just like the four jurists who, prosecutors who stepped down from the Roger Stone case, and other surprises that our tweet master is throwing at us.
Well, there
and
you
people
go
taking stands, which is what I appreciate. You know, it feels like at some point there's no rules, and anybody can say anything, and anybody can do anything, and it's sort of a free for all. It feels like I'm really appreciative of people who stand up and take a stand and say no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we need them. Any democratic republic, any democracy has always relied upon people to somewhere along the line say, okay, I can't compromise my ethics here any farther. Have to stand.
Yep.
Well, and it flows to us as well. Like it I was does. Watching one of the, you know, end of last week's news recaps and just, you know, fists are clenching tighter, teeth are starting to grind. And it's like, all right, a letter to the beachcomber. And then I thought, wait a minute, nobody needs to hear more of this. And so instead, turn off the TV and started working on a federal election strategy briefing that's coming up here next week. So and I figured that was a better use of my time.
Yes. And so the federal election strategy briefing, what
is that?
Fill us in on that, if you would.
Well, it's very fascinating right now. A lot of people in the country want to be part of what's the election that's coming up, right? And there's a lot of work to do here in Washington. So that's what the state election briefing is about. And it's about on Vashon, we know that we will be true blue and support the progressive candidate. But our neighbors aren't necessarily likely to do that. So we can help people of our same values in districts like in Puyallup and Fife and south of Tacoma be aware that they should be participating in the voting process. And so basically people are out knocking on doors right now, right, to let people know. And it's a matter of where do you go to have the most beneficial impact. So that's at the state level. But at the federal level, we're looking at which states will play an outsized role in the 2020 federal election. And if you assume that all the blue states will stay blue, then all the rest of the states that were in the middle of that blue-red divide.
They call them purple or something. I've heard them referred to.
Absolutely. And then which of those are on the path to get to 270 electoral college votes, and which of those are on the path to get to a gain of 4 U.S. senators so that we have an opportunity to have Democrats in control of the U.S. Senate.
That is going to be crucial because Cynthia and I were discussing this over the last couple of days on the heels of that article that I circulated about the tyranny of the minority and how 18% of the country's population can elect enough senators to control the Senate, which is just maddening. And Bruce has talked about that in terms of how that whole thing works with the apportionment of votes and everything. But one voter in Wyoming equals, I think, over 670 voters in California in terms of their clout in the Electoral College and in the Senate. Yeah.
Right. And then the filibuster on top of that with the 60% requirement to pass things. Yeah, it does give them a tremendous outsized influence.
So the Senate is huge.
It is.
Because, I mean, look at, this is what Cynthia and I were talking about specifically, was the way that there's been legislation starting with the partway through Obama's first term and all the way through. And if it hasn't met with the approval of Mitch McConnell, it's just buried. Mm-hmm. And that's that.
Yeah. So if people want to hear these recommendations, they can, our dear listener, there's an email address that I'll say in a moment here, but on Monday, March 2nd at 7 p.m. is the state election engagement webinar, and anybody can join that. There's a Zoom meeting that I could send them the information. And then Seattle Indivisible is kicking off their monthly meetings leading up to the election. They just had their 2020 surge meeting last week, and they've invited me to talk about the federal election focus, and that's going to be Wednesday, March 4th. That's in Seattle at 6 p.m. And so you'd have to go into town. But I got 3 seats in my car. If you want to send me an email at getoutthevote@indivisiblevashon.org. All one word, getoutthevote@indivisiblevashon.org. And we can connect you with those things if you'd like.
I think it's so important that we've you know, do some careful strategy like that and some real emphasis on the vote. Because when I get low about, you know, everything that's happening that's so crazy and the bully pulpit that has an outsized voice, as well as these outsized electoral college jerry-rigging that's been done, the one thing that I hold on to is there's more of us to vote than there are of them to vote. And they're using everything to try to diminish a voter turnout because they know there's more Democrats than Republicans.
And so Congressman Smith was at the 2020 Surge Seattle Indivisible meeting, and he said, you know, the people are with our policies. The people want health care.
That's Adam Smith from the 9th
Adam
District.
Smith. The people want child care. The people want to have wages that can support the cost of housing. The people want infrastructure that will allow them to have jobs. But that's not the party in control's policies right now. The people want to have clean air, clean water. So you're right. It's absolutely a matter now of how do we mobilize those who share those values to make sure to raise their voices in the process. And less than half of the people actually contributed in 2016. So that's the needle we're trying to move.
Well, I'm not sure our process really is very helpful to that mid campaign clarity, because we've got so many candidates, you know. And I was just reading somebody's editorial, which I kind of brought in. I can quote him in a second, but it was talking about how in most other presidential campaigns, people have dropped out when they haven't won some of these very major states in the primaries. And what's happening now is that we have, you know, some very progressive, extremely progressive people on one side and a band of conservatives in the middle. And the other thing that we've often done is throw out the extremes and go to the center so that we can get more people on board. And that's not happening. We've got, you know, Bernie is surging ahead with moderate sort of, I don't know what I'm trying. I'm moving my hands around.
It's very impressive here.
It's like a shell game. So I'm a little frustrated myself at how hard it is to kind of come to that rock solid, get behind somebody and let's make it happen.
We have a very clunky, outdated kind of system, I think, for nominating folks, and it is so long. It just goes on forever. And I think part of that is there's a lot of money to be made within the media by hyping everything up. I don't usually look at much on the news, but I clicked on some CNN, I think, or MSNBC, I can't remember anyway, things about the recent caucuses and stuff. And here were the talking heads. And we're talking bodies. I want to emphasize that.
Exactly.
Talking
we're
mouths.
Fully formed human beings.
But they were discussing things as if this, I think it was right after the New Hampshire vote. So there'd been two votes and a total of, let's see, New Hampshire had about 300,000 people come out for that. And Iowa had about 176,000. So not quite 500,000 people. And they were discussing it as if this was so dramatic and crucial and hyping the whole thing up. And it's like, we got a long ways to go here.
The Democratic National Committee is going to spend $150 million on ads before the convention.
$150 million.
Which is about a quarter of what Bloomberg is spending. Probably a tenth of what Trump will spend.
Yeah, his own.
Yeah, wow. Exactly.
They're spending that before the candidate.
And so what is their plan? What are they advertising?
They're anti-Trump. They're all, you know, kill Trump. I mean, not literally.
Exactly.
That is one of the words you can say, but.
Wow.
And how.
And I hope that becomes pro the values that we really want to see encoded in our government.
I saw two of the ads that they that they put out, and they were both just anti-Trump.
Going negative.
Yeah.
But what Kevin has been saying is so important. I think if we just do anti-Trump, you know, there was some other article that I read that said we're going to make a terrible mistake as Democrats if we sort of throw the baby out with the bathwater. Yeah. And if we don't speak to bread and butter issues and the commonalities that we have with the people, that we're going to lose this election.
Yeah, you know, that's where Bernie is all just, I mean, I've not decided who I'm going to support in the primary, but Bernie is so on message and has been for, 5 years now. That's the kind of messaging that I think is important about what are the things that you're going to cast your vote for this person to try to bring forward. And Smart Vote is, I think I might have mentioned this last week, but a website called Vote Smart actually allows you to get online, and it'll show if you're in the right place. It'll show you if you want to email me, getoutthevote@indivisiblevashon.org. I will send you the link also to Vote Smart. There's like a dozen questions. You click on topics and answer a question, like should we build a wall? Mm-hmm. And how important is that question to you? And so you can answer yes, no, and high or low. And basically what happens is you answer questions. The 8 candidates on the screen sort of reshuffle. And what happens is the candidate that is most aligned with your views starts to move to the left, and the candidates who are not aligned with your views start to move to the right. Mm-hmm. And basically, it's, you know, we're a left-to-right society. So, you know, you see that the one on the left is the one you want to vote for, which for me is true anyway. But yeah, it's, there's lots and lots of ways to kind of get a handle on that crowd and see really who does share those values that we individually have and that we want to see going forward.
Yeah. If you go to, if you go to that Vote Smart, if you just Google that, you'll get Vote Easy. It's, the actual site is, it's the justfactsvotesmart.org, I believe it is.
Justfactsvotesmart.org.
But then you click on Vote Easy, and you get to that.
The page
you were just discussing.
Okay. Yeah. It's coming up here in the studio as we speak.
It is.
And then and I think you get options there.
There's presidential or congressional.
Mm-hmm. Are you saying that this is an electronic voting?
No,
it's kind of polling and trial and kind of see what comes up.
It just shows you. I mean, I've seen these before. They ask you, you know, how far left or right of you of a particular issue, and you just answer the question. You know, hey, how do you feel about blah blah blah?
Yeah, so true. Pick a topic up there at the top and click on it.
Let's look at budget. And it says, in order to balance the budget, do you support an income tax increase or any tax on any tax bracket, yes or no?
Meaning, do you support like across the board, or would you favor an income tax increase on high spenders? But that's the question. Yeah. You know, kind of prompts that kind of question, and then you can answer that, right?
Yeah. So you can say yes or no, and then all right. Let's see what it says. All right. So then it says, how important is this question to you?
Yeah. Now look at what happened to the people, right? All of a sudden, Bernie, Biden, Klobuchar, right.
Tulsi Gabbard.
Yeah. So it basically lines them up around that particular issue.
Yeah.
It's kind of fascinating.
Interesting. Yeah.
So, but I should also say, while we're at it, we're talking about voting and candidates, because everybody has their ballot. We mentioned that before, and there's 13 Democratic Party candidates on your ballot.
Yes.
But you know what? There's 5 of them who are actually not running anymore.
Yes, that's correct. And my name is not on there. I chose not to get involved in Washington State's primary. Presidential campaign is still active, though.
Well, we should let people know that there is a space for a write-in. So,
I'm starting to feel, though, at this stage that perhaps I ought to, you know, cast my support behind another candidate.
Okay.
I'm still thinking about it. Fair enough.
I mean, keep your options open. But I should say that Michael Bennett, Cory Booker, John Delaney, Deval Patrick, and Andrew Yang have all now officially dropped out.
Yeah.
And the important thing to consider, while I desperately want people to vote, definitely vote. We may want to think about waiting until after Super Tuesday, which is, what, Tuesday next week. I think it's March
the 3rd.
3rd, March. Mm-hmm.
A week
March
from today.
3-3. Because, you know, a couple others might decide they're not going to keep their hat in the ring, too. So we have until March 10th. So you got time. But in those 2 or 3 days after the Super Tuesday, there may also be a smaller, as you mentioned, Lynn, a narrowing of the field, which mm-hmm. is so important, so we can focus on who's really
so
likely
don't
to go
panic.
Forward.
Take your time and consider these things carefully.
Cool yeah. head, yeah,
yeah.
And I want to. I love being vindicated by other commentators.
Isn't that great?
Yes,
such a good feeling.
I really love it. But
I thought of that 6 months ago.
I think it was last week when I was saying I think the other thing Democrats have to do is stop shooting ourselves in the foot if we don't get the exact person that we want. Mm-hmm. And I think I called it juvenile last week,
mm-hmm.
you
oh, yes.
know, in saying that that's kind of, you know, cutting off our nose to
sure.
spite our face. So,
old, if I can't be quarterback, I'm going to take the ball and go home.
Yeah. yeah. And Frank Bruni wrote a column in the New York Times this Sunday, the 23rd, on exactly that. It's kind of saying Democrats are bound for disaster if we cannot accept that not everybody gets exactly what they want all the time. And that, I mean, he even said, what would salvage this set of circumstances is the acceptance and acknowledgement by Democrats who don't get what they want, that perpetually sore feelings serve little purpose. That perspective, that maturity is in retreat.
Boy.
So it does call us to realize that this is not like something that you can walk away from and cancel out, like somebody you don't care for on mm-hmm. social media. Mm-hmm. This is huge.
As we spoke about, I think, last week, and has been brought up more than once in different journals, the people who said, well, I'm not going to vote for Hillary Clinton. I was going to vote for Bernie Sanders, which is a sad thing, and it's something that Bernie is... he's addressed to a degree, things that I've read, but holy cow, that cost the Electoral College. And it's frustrating because people have said, oh, a woman isn't electable. Well, a woman is electable. A majority of people voted for Hillary Clinton.
Yes.
She's not electable if you don't vote for her.
Exactly. Yes.
I mean, that's pretty clear.
Yeah. yeah.
Which is
yes.
really maybe what that word is coded to
be.
Mean.
Be.
I don't want to vote for her. You know, I mean, deeper reasons, whatever they are, you know, vestigial sexism or feeling that women are too snarky or compromised by bleeding
that?
Out of
yeah.
our eyes and you wherever.
Know, but, you know, but I
yeah,
I think
that.
I think that now, this is, I'm going out on a limb here, but I really think that that is fading and it's fading rapidly. We are in the midst of such change.
Yeah, we are.
And women have found their voice, and I don't think there's any going back. And we have women increasingly in heading up CEO positions. And, you know, it's not a 50-50 thing. I don't know if it ever will be a 50-50 thing because it just life doesn't work that way.
Well, it's only been 100 years since women got the vote.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 100 years this year.
This year.
And so it took us a while to
And look
to
at
do
the
that.
Battle that was fought
mm-hmm.
to
oh,
get
yeah.
that.
Oh,
there
yeah.
were women from the very start, I believe, Abigail Adams raised the issue with John Adams of let's work something in here that gives women suffrage.
Yeah, and so. There was a radio show that I was hearing yesterday that was talking about black women didn't really feel very raised in the past by what is now considered sort of that first wave white feminism, you know, that came mm. because what little power we had, we used mm-hmm. to try to get some advancement,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
it didn't always speak to black women's needs, and mm-hmm. they are resurging at this point, or surging, I can't say re, mm-hmm. you know, they're right. surging in making their mm-hmm. statements of how they want to be represented and what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've been fascinated, I'm going to bring this back to the election, I've been fascinated and wonder if y'all have heard the sort of comments about the votes between Biden or Buttigieg. You know, we've got South Carolina coming up, and kind of the critical nature of getting black voters paired with somebody they think is going to support them mm-hmm. and believe in them and continue, you know, the hope that they felt during Obama. And on your coattails, you know, unless you're pulling them along with mm-hmm. you directly.
Well, none of us is omnipotent or omniscient, and so it's a constant reminder, I guess, to stay humble and stay attentive.
Yeah, and definitely to the point you were making about the next round of votes in the southern states, and that, and just the mass of states participating in Super Tuesday will be a much bigger indicator. And mm-hmm. Michael, you were pointing out earlier, just so few people have really contributed to the course that we're seeing right now.
Right.
So I think that's important to look to. I was going to say in terms of women in politics and leadership, that while it's always a fallacy to say, hey, one example does not mean that we're done and everything's happy. But, you know, locally, we're represented by 7 people, 4 of which are women.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right. And I think that's a good trend. One of the comments Senator Nelson makes about people on your coattails or not, I think is a very compelling statement about your vote and how important your vote is. And sitting at home might be okay for you, but it may not be okay for the people in your neighborhood or in your state or your mm-hmm. district. And she talks about communities where the kids who go to school bring 2 backpacks, one with their school supplies and one with clothing and some food. In the event, if they get home, their parents may have been picked up by ICE.
Wow.
No longer at the house.
Yeah.
And so they then have to fend for themselves, mm-hmm. you know, school age kids. And the idea that, you know, we can all vote our vote no matter what we see as our best values. But if we choose not to vote, or we choose to support a candidate who has little chance of winning as a protest vote, realize that we can use our vote to support other people as well, who may not be as privileged as we are, may not be as benefited. And what kind of world do we think we should create? And our vote can do that too. So mm-hmm. I think it's important to think with our heads when it comes to the general, and recognize that collectively, all those decisions really make a big, big difference in the end.
And I want to
well
throw
said,
in here.
To,
yes, wonderfully well said. And I feel like we not only need to think with our heads, but we need to think with our heads and our hearts.
Absolutely.
And I'm kind of getting all smushy feeling there and all, but we really do. What kind of, this kind of goes back to what we've talked a little bit about before, community. It's not just, there's a wonderful saying that a guy I read, he said, life is not about me. I am about life. And it's easy to get pulled away from that with all our hyped up world that we live in.
Not to go off on a tangent, but this is related to the anti-vaxxers and that.
Yes,
whole,
exactly.
It's the same idea.
Same mm-hmm. principle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're not just inoculating your kids, but you're inoculating the
kids around you and all. Yeah, we are part of a community, and there's our little community, there's our family and friends, and then it just keeps going out from there, but we're all in this together.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I really appreciate that this particular conversation, especially Michael, that you know, men are bringing it up. And I'm saying this because we were just talking a little bit about feminism, and it has required men to open up tremendously to new possibilities and new ways of thinking. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's scary to be at that place of not knowing how all this is going to turn out, and, you know, not knowing if you personally will get your needs met if you act altruistically. You know, we live in a very materialist, individualist culture. And I think it's helpful to remember that, you know, who benefits from us being so reduced to just an individual, mm-hmm. you know, is the people who use that singularity to say, oh, well, you know, we're closing down this plant here in this city, mm-hmm. but you can go to yeah. Salt Lake mm-hmm. or whatever. I mean, that's used.
Yeah. We wind up becoming atomized mm-hmm. individuals, sort of just circling around in our own little
exactly.
orbit. There are so many indicators that are hopeful to me. I think, is it safe to say that it's always darkest before the dawn? I don't know.
That's, I don't know.
I'm full of platitudes this morning. I'm sorry. It just...
Well, we're certainly at a big turning point. That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
And I hope that people will come out of their shells and out of their selves and their egos and come out to the polls and kind of really take this one seriously.
It takes some courage and some faith to do that, I think, because a lot of times what we're talking about is something that has to do with power. If I feel like I have enough power to get my needs met, I'm pretty comfortable. I'm going to be able to give more here or there. But when I feel like, I'm feeling like my central power base is threatened here, then I'm going to close ranks. I'm going to pull up and close down there. And so it takes not only some courage, but some faith mm-hmm. in my own ability to effect change and in other people's ability to work with me to effect change that will help us, benefit us all. So that's a...
Truman, you've been quiet today. What have you been thinking about?
Fat Tuesday.
Let's come right back to what awaits us tonight.
You betcha. It's a good thing to think about. Yeah. It's a good
I heard on the radio in that same Black Feminism program that I heard is that, you know, they need that we, pundits, the media, everybody needs to understand that people are not sitting around reading the New York Times on Sunday morning. And I thought, gosh, I am. And I guess I think that everybody is. So that's why we do what we do and try to spread a little bit of what we do and to link with y'all in solidarity and say, get out and vote with us.
Many years ago when I was flying, I had a first officer who was, I've never met anyone like this ever. He knew that everyone thought exactly like he did. I mean, and when he said, oh, well, you know, of course, this something is this way. And I went, whoa, no, I don't think that at all. He looked at me like I was an alien.
How is that possible?
Yeah. How is it possible that someone could think differently than me? Mm-hmm. I was astounded. But there are a lot of people out there that are like that, folks.
I think it's pretty natural for us to, we have our egos and our ego runs the show and our ego doesn't want to ever be confronted by anything that it doesn't want. And that kind of plays into that sort of thing.
And on top of habits that we have and refuse to break and loosen up our assumptions and all of that, you know, we can be in trouble if we don't let some light shine in through some cracks here and
we're
there.
We're a silly lot.
I will tell you real quickly, though, that he did bring his fiancée on a trip with him one time, and we were all out to dinner, and he said something, and she looked at him like, are you kidding me? And I thought, ooh, there's going to be trouble there.
Okay. The learning curve starts now.
Starts now.
Well, Fat Tuesday, you know, heralds the last chance of revelry before the season of Lent. And so let us revel tonight.
There you go.
Laissez les bon temps rouler.
There you are. Let the good times roll. Here we go.